We've got a lot of emails with a lot of excitement of having on the show this next guest. In fact, let me read this email before we introduce him. It's from a gentleman calling himself Daniel Watley. He says, "Hello, Russell. Thanks for having David Icke on the show. Really looking forward to it. Please not. Please try not to take the..." And then he says the word P-I-S-S, which is a sexy swear word, I believe, in the right context. "Please don't take the P. I know it'll be tough, but there are some of us who think what he tells us is very much true and far from being a joke. Cheers in advance and great show. Keep it up. From another 8 years clean, ex-smackhead." Congratulations on your 8 years clean. If you've been listening to the show, Daniel, you'll know that I do not approach David with cynicism, but rather embrace what I think are some magnificent ideas. Hello, David, are you there?
Russell, mate, how are you?
I'm spectacularly well today. A little bit disappointed by our miserable failure to get into the record books, but other than that, I'm upbeat.
So you're on the Isle of Wight next week, then?
Yeah, we're coming over there to stay there and perhaps live like a feudal barons. We were going to try and conquer the Isle of Wight and begin our attempt at revolution there. You'll live there, do you, David?
Great idea. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I've lived there since 82.
What's it like there?
Well, it's like anywhere else, really. it really is.
It's like anywhere else?
It's a bit slower, but... Mm. But they're doing their best to turn it into what the mainland is, so...
I went there as a child. David, sorry to interrupt you. I went there for a holiday as a child, and I got a little glass bird with different coloured sand.
Oh, yeah, Allen Bay.
Strata sand.
Allen Bay, yeah. Back in the 50s, I was filling me... don't know how to put this. I was filling me thing.
Yeah.
With coloured sand in the 50s, yeah. And then they eventually realised that actually the cliff was falling.
Oh, bloody hell.
You know, because they were kept cutting it away with thousands of holidaymakers, so... A penny drop, so you have to buy it from the shop now.
Right, you can't just go and excavate different coloured sand because you're actually eroding the world. It sounds like the kind of ecological disaster, David, that you predicted. I was watching that notorious, infamous appearance of you on Wogan. That's like 16 years ago, was it?
Yeah, 1991, I think it was.
We're in the very studio where Wogan broadcast from. And 91, so I was like, what, like, sort of, I was 15 or 16, but, like, when I watched that, and it's like, if you're sort of too young to remember, it's like Terry Wogan, who the very much the king of Radio 2, from where we're broadcasting now, Matt sat in Wogan's chair, trouserless as always, looking at a note left for Wogan, telling him he's got to sort out his eyesight. Wogan was very, Terry Wogan, who obviously I deeply respect as a broadcaster and a colleague, I suppose, was very cynical towards Dave. You did seem a bit balmy then, David. But I remember even thinking as a 15-year-old, I thought, this sounds all right, this stuff. And like, I was quite impacted by it, and I was very unhappy about the way you were treated. And like, but not, you know, I think that Terry genuinely didn't mean to be rude, but the sort of the audience, he seemed a little bit kind of, I don't know, sceptical, uncomfortable, and odd.
Well, I don't think it would take much to make Terry sceptical about much, really, because I don't think his box is very large. But
I happen to have met Terry, and he was packing heat. Let me tell you, David, down there, he could be in the Guinness World of Records. And especially as he's bloody Irish, they'd probably put him in there without even sending an adjudicator around. That seems to be how it works, from what I've told. But like, but really, so since then you've gone an incredible journey, David. And there's a lot of your seminars sell out, don't they, all over the world? You've sold hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of books, haven't you?
Well, I sell a lot of books, yeah, it's always a struggle when you're a one-man band, really, trying to get information out into an arena that is dominated by global corporations.
Yes, yes, this is something which few people would dispute, although we're kind of lethargic about confronting that idea. No one seems to... That's one of the things I was querying the other day, David. I thought if all of us completely accepted the idea that we are being manipulated by a combination of the media, the government and multinational corporations, if people completely understood that idea, do you think they would still be utterly apathetic, or do you think that could be sufficient information to instigate change?
I think a lot of people would find the nearest bucket of sand and stick their head in it, yeah.
Don't do it in the Isle of Wight, though, because it could be dangerous.
It'd probably fall off the cliff. But I can tell you, I've been a barometer for this, really. I mean, you know, that thing with the Wogan show, life is a journey, and we tend to judge every step at the time we're making the step.
Right.
And it's only when we see the steps following one after the other that we realize, actually, that life often gives us our greatest gifts, brilliantly disguised as our worst nightmares.
Mm.
And that was, you know, for someone who was concerned at that time in how I was perceived, was the worst nightmare. But what it was a fantastic gift.
Yeah.
And without that, I couldn't have gone on this journey that's led to where I am now, because one of the key things that it did was allow me to leave the prison that most people live in.
Yeah.
The greatest limiter of people, and that is the fear of what other people think.
Yes.
Most people are so concerned about what other people think. They edit what they say. They edit the way they live their lives, and they're not actually living their own uniqueness. They're living someone else's version of what they think they should be.
I would concur, David, that most of us tend to live in a prescribed reality, and that freedom is an illusion, because the freedom exists within such narrow parameters that ultimately we are enslaved by a very manipulative ideology. David, can you say, you know, some of them, well, I watched something about you recently. I was Ike Wright. The program's on Channel 5, I believe.
Right.
I watched it on YouTube. It was brilliant. Well, the thing that I think will grab people's attention certainly is that, like, our listeners, as you can imagine, they're mostly blind drunk, they're revelers, they're pro-revolutionary already. No, they're not people...
Oh, I'm with them.
We're not conditioned citizens on our radio show, very much pro-revolutionary. Hit us with some of the stuff like predictions and that you made, because that's kind of headline-making, interesting stuff. Like, the stuff you said, like, you know, in 1990 you talked about an attack on a major American city and something about New Orleans. Could you tell us about that sort of stuff, please?
Well,
how you bloody well knew.
The thing is that... you know, that was a long time ago, but in terms of the point, it's much easier to predict at least the themes of what is coming when you have researched the agenda that these guys want to put into place.
What is the agenda?
The agenda is to create a global version of Orwell's 1984, in effect, and one of the...
How can there be complicity across the world from so many diverse political ideologues and governmental bodies? How can, like, sort of like America and China and, you know, sort of, I don't know, India, how can all these sort of diverse ideas cooperate?
Well, what I do in my new book has just come out, which is a major work of dot connecting, is show how this is possible. And basically, there's a structure that is like Russian dolls, one doll inside a bigger doll inside a bigger doll.
Yes.
Only their structure is pyramids inside pyramids inside pyramids until there is a pyramid that encompasses all the others. Give you an example.
Yes.
If you go to a bank and you talk to the guy across the counter,
yeah,
he doesn't know what the bank manager behind him is deciding or talking about.
Right.
The bank manager doesn't know what the next level of the bank is talking about, and eventually you get to the peak of the pyramid of that bank where,
yes,
there's a tiny few people who are the only people that really know the agenda.
So you would say that you think there's a coordinated hierarchical pyramid at the top of which everyone is complicit.
Oh, I show that very much in the book. And you see, if you look at the way organizations, whether it's the BBC or a transnational corporation or a government, the way they're structured,
yeah,
it is as a compartmentalized pyramid.
Right.
The vast majority of people are in the bottom of the pyramid, and they're just going to work and doing their job and going home.
Yeah.
The only people that know how all those individual, innocent contributions fit together to create anything but an innocent way that we're going,
yes,
there are very, very few at the top. And so, you know, you've got a government. People say it's the government. The vast majority of people in government are just earning a living and going home.
Right.
It's the few who coordinate the agenda within the government.
Sorry,
and every day, people are making decisions to centralize power who have no idea why they're doing it.
Do you think that public figures like, you know, Gordon Brown, George Bush, do you think that how much information do you think they have, or do you think that they are merely marionettes?
Well, the thing is, if you are in a public position, like a prime minister or a president, you are nowhere near the top of the pyramid. They
so
are brought in and brought out, and they
interchangeable.
Are...
Interchangeable, so it don't matter.
They're interchangeable.
Well.
But, of course, there are some that know more than others, and I've been exposing in great detail the horrific background to the Bush family for many, many years.
Yeah, so why does it, right, this is my point, actually, right, David, because, like, say, right, then if the Bushes have no legitimate or actual power, then why does it matter that their lineage stretches back to the Roman Empire or whatever? Because you said that they're quite far down the hierarchical chain. Why does that matter? And some of the, you know, like the reptilian stuff, I sort of think, well, why would it matter whether that's true or not of, you know, people in the royal family or people in positions of power if they're actually removed?
The bloodline itself, Russell, has a hierarchy. So, you know, the Bush family are part of the bloodline network, but they are a lower level of it. In terms of Father George Bush, he's far higher up the hierarchy than his son.
He sounds all right, like a St. Nicholas figure.
Yeah, Father George Bush, yeah. He sounds benign when you say it, but if you knew his background, it would turn your stomach.
It does, actually, because I know he's involved in oil and bombs and all sorts of silly sodding.
Yeah, and children, yeah.
Children!
Which I've exposed in my books in great detail.
Well, say that on the radio. That sounds bonkers. Go on, David. I'm not being dismissive. What? George Bush and children, what?
Oh, he's a notorious paedophile, Father George Bush.
Wow, there we go!
Yeah. Absolutely.
Obviously not the views of the BBC. I obviously have to say that, David. You would be aware that that's
It wouldn't be the views of the BBC. But,
actually, yeah, hold on. I've just looked at the guidelines. That is the views of the BBC!
For 20 years, and I've written about it in great detail in my books. Yeah, absolutely.
The thing is,
Russell, that the world is not just a little bit not like we think it is. The world is nothing like we think it is. What we're seeing in the mainstream media is a movie. It is a movie to keep our minds occupied so the real agenda can go on behind it. And that's what's going on. And you see, the vast majority of people in the media, people say, it's the media. Well, does that mean every journalist is in on it? Of course not. What does the media do? The media takes what officialdom tells it is the situation, like the official story of 9/11, what a load of nonsense that is, provable fact, and it tells the people what the authorities have told the media is the situation. Investigative journalism today is reading the morning papers and watching BBC News 24 on the newsroom telly. Investigative journalism worth a name, and that's why they can get away with it.
Yeah, fair enough, I completely agree with you. I wouldn't dispute any of that. Now, we can't carry on talking like that because we have to muck about on our show. Before you came here, there was a man just eating bananas to get in the Guinness Book of Records, Matt Morgan, and he frankly failed to do it, and now he's got the gall to hold up a piece of paper with the simple letters UFOs written on. David, what do you think's going on with UFOs? What about the Raelian stuff and all the, you know, sort of Eric von Daniken stuff that, you know, that life on Earth seeded by extraterrestrials? Are you into that sort of idea?
Well, I think absolutely that there has been a non-human intervention in life on Earth, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's one of those things, you know, when people think something and it's the done thing to think it, like the Earth is flat, and then eventually it dawns on people that the Earth is round, and people say,
"What?
It's so obvious all along. What were we doing thinking it was flat? They were crazy thinking it was flat." The idea that life as we know it only exists on this one little planet in this one little solar system. I mean, crikey. I mean, if you want to mess about, let's talk about that nonsense. I mean, it's ridiculous. So
yeah, I think it's preposterous. I wouldn't dispute anything that you've thus far said, except maybe that George Bush paedophile thing, because that's something that we'd need a photograph
if you want that. No problem.
Okay. Make sure, don't send it on my bloody computer. I don't want that clogged up with George Bush. Just stood in a grotto looking guilty. Hey, David, we're in the Isle of Wight next week. Do you want to come on the radio show? We can meet in person.
Mate. Yeah, where are you anyway on the island?
I don't know because I'm not very good at saying things like
that.
Also, I mustn't say on the radio, case to remember, because then people want to come into my glorious cove and have it off with me, which could get me in the Guinness World Records, but let's do it by legit means.
I'm sure you've already broken that, Russell.
Thank you very much for acknowledging it. David, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on our show. It's a pleasure to talk to you, sir. Speak to you next week in the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, great. See you.
Take care. Bye-bye, David. There he goes, David Icke.